Welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 318. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here in a very hot and slightly rainy Louisville, Kentucky. And it's kind of a little bit different episode. It's just going to be the three stooges of this podcast. No guests tonight, but let's go ahead and get to everyone's favorite co-captains all the way out in Los Angeles, the City of Angels, La La Land. Mr. Andre Dominguez, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very well, Mike. Thank you very much.
Oh, awesome. And also, the other everyone's favorite other co-captain is none other than Mrs. Roxanna Angles, all the way out in Topeka, California. How are you doing tonight, Roxanna?
I'm doing so great in Palm Desert, California.
Well, we were supposed to have Mr. Johnny Sisson on tonight from the Classic Lenses podcast. But, I mean, as if you guys have been following that podcast, so, you know, Johnny's been dealing with some health issues recently. And so he's got actually has a really early, I think, doctor's appointment or something tomorrow morning. And so recording on our side wasn't going to necessarily work for him. We wish the best for Johnny and better soon. So, I spoke to him with him today through some direct messaging and definitely going to try to get him rescheduled sometime in the near future. So, look forward to when we finally can get Johnny back on. And best wishes for his health and get better, Johnny. So we're all pulling for you on that one. So, that leaves us with just us three. So it's kind of an old school. Hey, let's just catch up so we can just kind of wing it. We're just going to wing this episode. So, I guess, guys, what do you think? We just go right into our weeks, right? What we've been up to.
Let's Sounds do good it.
To me.
All right. Well, we'll start with Andre as usual. How you been, Andre? What have you been up to?
I've been good, man. Let's see. What did I do this weekend? Audrey and I went to, well, starting on Friday, actually, we had this thing with Cinestill where anybody that was documenting either a Juneteenth celebration or any kind of march or, you know, protest or organized event happening in the city of L.A., could stop by the office and pick up a free roll of film. And I had the idea of whipping out the roll of Flex. And since the thing that we were giving out was 50D and it was a relatively sunny day, I figured it would be cool to, as we were starting to sort of have conversations with people who were coming by to pick up film, I loaded up a roll of 50D 120 in my Rolleiflex, and anybody that came to pick up a roll, I asked them if it was okay if I took a picture of them. So I ended up shooting about two rolls of just, you know, some really cool people, met some really interesting folks here in the city of LA who the vast majority of them didn't know that our office was located there in Hollywood, since we don't have some like huge sign on the outside. So met some folks that were even, you know, basically neighbors of ours, had some really cool talks. And, my plan is to sometime this week develop these and, you know, get them all scanned up and post them to our Instagram stories, maybe in like a kind of like fast cut like GIF, so that it's going like from person to person relatively quickly, just to say like a thank you for people having come over and helped us document what's going on in our city in a way that we couldn't necessarily. I mean, we're a team of five people. So as much as we would like to be out there, you know, documenting protests, if just one of our team members gets sick, that's one fifth of our entire workforce.
Yeah, it's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was actually pretty cool. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Some interesting cameras on display. We had some Pentaxes, Mike.
Yes.
We had some Hasselblads. My friend whose Instagram handle is Film Negatives, which, you know, is pretty high up there along with Roxanna Log for those those Instagram handles that you think like, man, how did he pick that one up? he came down from the San Diego area. He's big in the San Diego Beers and Cameras Safe Light Labs crew down there. So it was good to see him. And then Saturday, my big thing that I did was that Audrey and I went to a drive-in theater where You pull up the car, they have this like big inflatable screen, and I shot that with the other thing that happened on Friday. Jeff Greenstein, who is a member of our Facebook group, you know, listens to the podcast, and you know, just so happens to be a bigwig Hollywood TV show runner, writer, producer. You may know him from such little things as Will and Grace and Parenthood and things like that. Wow. He actually came down to pick up a role, and he gave me a APS camera, which apparently was given to him as like a gift at like the wrapping of a season of Will and Grace back in, nice. In the early 2000s.
Well, so he had this. Did he know when he got it? It was the hottest trend in film photography. It's taken over the world by storm. I mean, does he know this?
Well, like, the trip that he was on, I believe it was, they gave him like a trip to the Olympics or something, and gave him this this camera as well. He had already brought with him his much more professional 35mm outfit. So I don't know if he would necessarily agree with the term hottest trend in film photography, especially because this thing is in like freaking new old stock condition. Had the box, all the documentation, this like little printed survey that you would like mail back to Kodak. It has like a $10 coupon.
You should totally mail that back to Kodak, that survey.
Well, I mean, we know some folks at Kodak and be like, hey, can I still redeem this? but that was a lot of fun. It was a double feature of Jurassic Park and The Princess Bride. And I shot, you know, some selfies with the APS camera with some Kodak 400 speed film that I assume, Mike, you're going to help me out by developing right. and scanning them for
right.
me.
I offered Andre a deal through messaging, Facebook Messenger or whatever. I think it was in the podcaster's thread or whatever. And I said, hey, Andre, because I have a Kodak APS camera, like a lot like the one you have, except mine has a fixed lens. I believe the one yours has a zoom on it, I think. Is that right? A little small zoom.
Yeah, it's a 20. Yeah. It's a 25 to 50.
Yeah, and so it's a little bit different than the one I have, and the one I have, it takes really good photos actually for you, and the thing is tiny, and so I was like, I wouldn't mind having that camera in my collection. So I was like, how can I wiggle this out of Andre's hands? I mean, I know he wants to be a cool kid and he wants to be a part of the hottest trend of film photography, but you know, I just thought, yeah, it'd probably fit a little better in my collection. I mean, Andre is trying to pare down his camera collection. So I was like, all right, Andre, I'll make you a deal. Just to make sure you shoot some APS in your lifetime, you shoot those three rows. He gave you three rows, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, it came with three rows.
Yeah, you shoot those three rows, send the rows and the camera to me. I'll keep the camera and I'll develop and scan the APS film for Andre and see his first experience. It really being a cool kid. So, yeah. Do we have a deal, Andre? Is that...
I mean, if Jeff would not be upset by the fact that I'd be giving you the camera, you know, I know that re-gifting is always a little bit of a controversial issue, but I mean, it sounds like a good deal to me. It's about the size of my Olympus XA. Mm-hmm. And I actually do, you know, speaking, not necessarily APS, but having used this for the past few days, like, I mean, just listen to that. Doesn't that just sound like fun?
That sounds, you know what that sounds like? That sounds like precision right there. That sounds like a precision photographic instrument. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it does make me at times wish that I had some kind of electronic point shoot. I haven't done any kind of camera thrifting or searching on eBay or OfferUp or things like that in a good long while. But, you know, the next time I find something, maybe one of the Olympus stylus zooms, mm-hmm. I think I might actually pick one up.
Yeah, they're fun, and those Olympus stylus zooms don't get near the love as the Mew 2 or the Epic stylus Epic or whatever. But I had one for a while, and I sold it, and I regret it because it did take really good photos. Those Olympus stylus zooms are still really good cameras, and mm-hmm. not nearly as expensive as the Epic is or whatever. So yeah,
exactly.
But hey, you know what's probably going to happen is you're gonna shoot these three rows of film. and I'm going to develop them and give you the scans back. And you'll be like, Mike, you're going to have to send that camera back to me. I'm addicted. Addictive photo system is what APS stands for. Addictive photo system. So, yeah. Just letting you know that.
We shall see.
All right, Andre, what else you got? Is that it?
Let's see. Is there anything else? No, other than that, this week I am just working on a few things. Selling some gear. I've got a lens that is going out to Tanner Gooding out in Montreal probably tomorrow. And then some other things that I'll likely be listing on the Facebook group before I put them on, you know, the main kind of platforms, just in case anybody within our community wants to pick that up. And then planning for, you know, my Big Bear trip. I'm sure that after this call is over, during the breaks, I'll be hitting up Roxana for some tips. I've already got some medium format ektachrome lined up. I probably need to pick up some 35, and I may be able to convince the employers to let me charge that on the CineStill tab. What with the fact that I am going to be testing out, you know, a new dilution of the D9 Dynamic Chrome, first developer.
There you go, yeah.
Squeezing out all the dynamic range that I can out of that film. So if they decide that that's a valid experiment, then I may be able to get my hands on a lot more ektachrome, since whether it's medium format or 35, I do want the photos from that trip, A, to not be ruined, like I did last time we went to Big Bear. But, you know, more importantly, I want it to be not just something where I'm, like, texting Audrey the scans afterwards. I would actually like to sit down and have a slideshow, or with the medium format, to look at them on a light table together. Have the photos from this trip be a little bit more a little bit more interactive. And I mean, it's our 1 year anniversary and all that stuff. So, yeah.
So this thing where you guys were giving out like a roll of film, right? Mm-hmm. CineStill. Did you have any randos come up and just be like, what are you doing here? Like, can I get one of those? And then you give it to them and they're like, what is this? What am I supposed to do with this?
Not randos in the sense that like they didn't know what the hell was going on, but we did get some, you know, some opportunists who were coming down, and obviously, like, we were trying to do everything safe, so I had a mask on. Like, you know, when I would open the door, I'd make sure to kind of stand there in the threshold so that people wouldn't just kind of, like, walk into the office. Mm-hmm. There was one person who, you know, as the door was opening, kind of stepped forward, and I was like, whoa, 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 buddy, like, step back, please. And I was, like, dropping the roll into their hands to make sure their hands didn't touch. But there was this one guy, so I would give them the film, and, like, we'd strike up a conversation. I would ask if there was, like, a particular, you know, Juneteenth celebration or, you know, protest or march that they were going to, because also we wanted to know, you know, what was happening over the weekend so that we could promote that on our social media. But there, so I gave the film to this one guy in particular and asked him, you know, is there any, you know, particular thing that you're going to that you're planning on documenting? And he was like, no, not really. I just, you know, heard the film was good and saw it on Instagram, so I came to get a free roll. And so he was honest about it, but I was like, okay, man, like,
it's like, it kind of reminds me of the guys that stand on the side of street corners with the cardboard signs. And I saw this guy the other day. I was going to downtown Louisville for something, and this guy was standing on a street corner with the cardboard sign that said, "I'm not going to lie, I just want to buy beer." And so I had to give him some credit. At least he's being honest, you know. But
yeah, he's being honest about it. But it's like, man, like, come on, this is for people trying to document like important civil rights stuff right now.
Right. Right.
But, you know, we only had one person that at least that said that. One guy said, oh, I'm going to try, but I'm not sure if my wife's going to let me. We've got young kids. And so, you know, don't know if she'll let me go to a protest or not. But, you know, even so, if I don't get to go, then at least I'll take some pictures of them. And I'm like, yeah, as long as you do some good with it, that's all we ask for.
Awesome. Awesome. So how many rows do you think you got? How many rows? Did you have a certain amount you were going to give out? And did you give those? How many rows did you end up giving out?
We gave out about like 30 rolls.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
and everywhere, like, people are listening to this and they're like, I can't even order Sin of Steel film right now. They're giving it out on the sidewalk. What's going on here? Like,
well, I will say this is 50D, which, you know, is a lot less popular than 800T, but, you know, it's a sleeper. I think a lot of people love XX, whether they buy it from us or they, you know, they buy it in bulk rolls and load it themselves. But 50D is really the sleeper out there. I mean, some people are scared of anything slower than 100 ISO. And if you live somewhere like in the UK where you have about like 4 days of sunlight a year, I understand the fact that an expensive, you know, color negative film at 50 ISO may not necessarily be for you. But for folks like me and Roxana that live in in, you know, bright, sunny Southern California, something that slow can actually be really useful if you are, you know, on a day that's sunny, but you want to take advantage of your, you know, nice, fast lenses and get some shallow depth of field. Sure, you can overexpose Portra, you know, 4 or 5 stops, but at a certain point, you're going to start losing some of that, you know, color depth once you've overexposed it like 5-6 stops. And I actually really like the fact that you do get very, very subtle halation in, you know, the overexposed highlights with that. There's particularly some shots that I remember that I took a couple of years ago at Christine Bartolucci's birthday where we went out to Malibu Wines. And just the fact that you've got like those just little glints of red halation around like the reflections on like wine glasses and people's sunglasses, I think looked really, really cool. And I'm really looking forward to doing some automotive photography with 50D. I've actually got a little bit of a project that I'm working on with Junior Wyatt, where he's going to be shooting black and white. I'm going to be shooting color. And both 6x6, both, you know, shooting cars, but that 50D, you know, ever so subtle halation on like the little chrome glints of these vintage cars, I think it's going to look really cool.
Very, very cool. Andre, I will tell you this, when you're shooting that APS film, since you are, it's probably expired, very expired, I'm guessing, probably early 2000s. It seems like be the stuff I get mostly. And, with a small camera like that, like the little Kodak, since you can't really change the ISO on it, can't change the EI anyway when you're shooting it, I heard this trick, and I think I'm going to try it with some of my APS compact cameras in the future, where you can take like a piece of like, you know, like the Scotch tape, like the transparent tape or whatever, and put a little piece over the light meter on it, and it will let a little less light in, so it will add some exposure to it. So, yeah, and also I've also heard people like taking a little piece of like a black and white film leader, like after it's developed and cleared, you know, just a clear piece of the negative from like the and putting that over the light meter to force the camera to give it a little more exposure. Because what I found with APS with my compact cameras is because the film is so expired, it does need a little more light hitting it, and there's no way to change, you know, to add exposure on most of those little tiny cameras. So that's why I like my APS SLRs, because I can do that. I can change the exposure compensation or whatever. But on those compact ones, you can't. And I would even like apply it to like any sort of compact camera, 35mm compact that has a light meter that and you can't change the exposure. It's something I want to try, like a little piece of clear tape, that kind of not the super clear tape, like the one that's kind of frosty tape, you know, that kind of looking tape. Yeah, and see if that adds a little more exposure and helps out a little bit on that kind of expired film. Just a tip I haven't tried yet, so I don't know, you'll probably get around to trying it before I do. So at the rate of three,
yeah, I'm going. I've actually got some of that frosted tape because a while ago I was doing some like testing with putting it across the back of a Holga, like where the film plane actually is, and using that as like a ground glass to test you know, the focus, which, man, the more and more I think about that experiment, the more I was like, you know what, that was so stupid. it's a Holga, just embrace it. But I ended up getting rid of that anyway, so.
Right. Well, Mike Williams won it, I believe, on the 300 giveaway. That's right. You know, I got to find out, has he posted any photos of that Holga? I'm not even sure if he fell in.
I think he might have.
I'm not, Yeah, I think I know he went out and shot it one day. I don't know if he fell in love with it or if he's like, oh, this is a piece of crap. Why did Andre send me this damn thing? I don't know. But, you know, Hoga is a love or hate thing, man. I love him, but I get why some people don't. It's just not their thing. But, man, I do love a Hoga. But
I'm so much more happy with my LCA 120. Like, in certain scenarios, it does still have that kind of softening of the corners and the vignetting. Everything that I've gotten out of that camera has been everything I wanted to get from the Hoga, but, you know, never could.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed what situations, because I have the regular 35 millimeter LCA, and I've been trying to get it to give me some of that vignetting, that some of all the photos that Lomography tells you this camera will do. Everything I've shot with my LCA, the 35 millimeter version, it just looks like they come out like just any other compact, you know, point and shoot 35 millimeter camera. And I haven't really got that that kind of Lomo look or whatever out of any of the photos I've taken with mine. Have you noticed any certain situation where it seems to kind of give you that vignetting, a little bit of that Lomo look?
The couple of situations that I've found that like pretty consistently and like predictably gives me that classic vignetting look is either if it's set to kind of like the shortest focus distance. So if I'm taking a selfie, for example, or if I've got it sort of shooting into the sun. So it's going to be stopping down the aperture as far as it goes. And I've noticed that anything where it's stopping down the maximum amount, and I'm shooting like Portra 400 in this for the most part. If I am shooting color, and that has typically given me that vignetting.
Good to know. Sometimes I need to break that camera out again and try it in those conditions maybe. And I thought maybe the trick would be to use a slower film and make it go to a wider aperture, but you're thinking that it's the using maybe a higher speed film in a smaller aperture. I mean, like F-16 or whatever.
You know, I'm not like 100% confident in that, but that's just like as I kind of, because I was actually printing out some photos of that. I'm making this like, and I'm pretty sure it's been a long time since Audrey's listened to the podcast. she's been pretty busy at work right now, and I think I'm pretty safe discussing this, but as a kind of small little anniversary gift, I'm putting together this little photo album of some shots that I've taken of the two of us this past year. And the vast majority of the ones that I've printed so far have been on the LCA 120, which really does highlight, you know, how much of a change that particular camera has had on my own shooting when it comes to shooting with her. I mean, you guys know just from listening to the podcast that I had gone months and months and months without, you know, busting out a camera for the first time. And then once I did, it was kind of this humming and hawing of like, I don't want to like piss her off if it's going to be too much or if it's going to make her uncomfortable. But since having the LCA 120 for about, what has it been, like three, 4 months now, I've taken more shots in that period of time during quarantine on these little trips of ours than I ever have. And it's been really, really nice.
Awesome.
I've always wanted to try that one. I haven't. That's one that I have yet to try. And it's one that's on my, like, you know, wish list of cameras for sure. And now hearing you talk about it, I'm like, now I really want one.
I'd be happy to lend it to you, Roxana, the next time that we meet up in person. You can borrow it for a little while.
For a day. We'll do a day trip, switch cameras or something.
It really is the kind of camera that I think that you would fall in love with, Roxana. Seeing as how you already like 6x6, having something that's like, you know, it's decently sharp in the center, but you've got that fall off. In some cases, you've got the vignetting, but you still have like control over it. If you're shooting in like a backlit situation, you can change the ISO dial to compensate for that. You've got your different zone focus distances. Like it doesn't feel as unpredictable to me as a Hoga, but it's still got a lot of that charm. It's like halfway between a Hoga and, you know,
a real camera.
Yeah, halfway between a Holga and a Hasselblad.
Yeah, Roxanne, you're probably only gonna get that about a day. I just
yeah. He's too in love. I'm not gonna take it more than a day. That's why I'm like, no, I'll test it for the day on a photo walk after when we can at least.
All right, so let's move on to Roxanna. What have you been up to, Roxanna? I'm sure you've probably, I don't know, changed the photographic history this week or whatever.
Hardly, but you know, it has been my first official week off for summer vacation, and I am so thankful for that because it was insanely busy up until, especially with everything that is going on. My job has been crazy.
I will say I was shocked. I think I got off work one night this last week and I was getting ready to exercise. I was getting ready to get on the elliptical machine, right? And I pulled up some podcasts, my podcast catcher, and I saw that Andre, did you see this? Roxanna's been doing a little cheating on us here. You know, I don't know.
I heard word through the grapevine.
Yeah, a little moonlighting. What's going on with this, Roxanne?
You know, it's all good. It's all the film community. We all have to, like, you know, give spread the love a little bit, don't you think?
I listened to it. It was a great episode. And so, yeah, why don't you tell the people about that? Because it was everyone needs to check this out. And it's also a great podcast, too. So if you haven't listened to Clay Daly's
Through My Lens with Clay Daly. Mm-hmm. And his Instagram is CWDALY. He does have a really good Instagram. I always like the tone. It's just like it has a good vibe to it. Mm-hmm. and very well spoken. But I was really honored that he asked me to be a guest in regards when we were going back and forth with some of the issues that are going on right now. It came up that I was writing a book about mindfulness and photography, and he wanted me on the show to talk about it. So it was really cool to go and chat for a little bit. It's not as long as our shows.
Most of them aren't.
Chatted for like a half hour. I was like, wow, that was fast.
I've actually got the rest of my day to myself. But it's funny because Clay and I we've had some messages back and forth. I've been wanting to have him on the show, and he was wanting to have me on the show. But I think he must have decided that, hey, you know what? Why would I get Gutterman on the show? Everyone's tired of hearing him. Let's get Roxanna. She's the superstar of Negative Positives. Let's go ahead and let's go straight to the star of the show. You know,
oh my gosh, hardly. Funny though.
it was a great episode. Everybody should check that out, and check out Clay's podcast as well, Through My Lens, because if you're one of those people, and a lot of people get tired of podcasts talking about like just gear and stuff, Clay, he really focuses on like the process or projects and stuff. It's more about like the process that each guest he has on, not so much about gear. I mean, I guess at times the gear comes up, but like it's definitely not a gear driven podcast for those that are like, oh, I wish everybody'd stop talking about gear, you know. But so that's a good one to check out. So all right, Roxanna, yeah, keep on going. Yeah, what else you got?
And that was like, that happened the day before I left for Big Bear. So I was going back and forth with Andre because he's going up there. And, you know, we, Brian and I took the kids up to Big Bear to get out, just get out into the nature, get out of here and out of the, you know, we feel like even though we've been going to the supermarket, it's just, we need something else because we were all going stir crazy. And so, you know, we went up to Big Bear and spent a couple nights up there. It was wonderful. I packed up I did mostly instant on my Big Bear trip. I took,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I took my Polaroid and I got one of those little Lomography instant cameras with like palm trees. I don't even know. It's like it shoots the mini Fuji film. I don't Yeah, but it was fun to take out because the film is so much cheaper. But you know, Polaroid's still my favorite.
Yeah, you know, I've always considered myself a Polaroid fan. I was a Polaroid fan back in the 90s, so there's a soft spot in my heart for them. But Matt Murray sent me his zine a week or so ago, and in the package he included a couple of Fuji, just actual Instax prints, and I never even it's in my hand, you know, because I've never owned one of the cameras. Never realize how good they look like that. That Instax, I mean, it is pretty good film, and it does have enough of like that, not like maybe not like today's Polaroid vibe, but it has a lot of that vibe from the 90s. Has a little bit of that look. I was surprised how it looked. So I wouldn't turn one down one of these days because the photos are pretty good. There was even one like he took of his dog, and it was a flash shot, and like it kind of reminded me of the old school Polaroid flash shots from the 90s when I used to shoot Polaroid.
Has a good vibe to it. You know, I've mm-hmm. shot a little bit with the Fuji Instax. I've bought cameras, I've sold them. I'm like, meh, it's okay. You know, but this one I really like because it gives you some options. Like I haven't tried it yet, but for multiple exposures, you can do some fun stuff with the Lomography versions of it. And I feel like, I don't know, you just have more options. I really enjoyed, and it's the film's cheap and the camera is, you know, hella cute and it's awesome, you know. But
yeah, I think if I bought into Fuji Instax, it would definitely be a Lomography camera. I'm not interested in in Fuji's cameras at all. Like they just do not interest me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they're kind of, I'm sorry, but they're kind of like ugly.
They're really bulky
and like clunky. And I had them both and I'm like, they're not my style. You know, Mm-hmm. I love the Lomography style, what they've done. And I like the features better too. So, you know, it was fun. It was on sale. And that's what happens when you're in a pandemic and you shop online. Right. And so we went up to Big Bear. I shot some film and we had fun. It was great being more in the moment with the instant film and, you know, just take a shot and you're done. When I came back and I checked the mail, I got a postcard from one of our listeners, Bob St. Cyr. And he's Photo Bob on Instagram with an F, but it was just this beautiful postcard I don't even know what the process is that he does, but it was just so, I was so blown away and it was really cool to see. It was like called Follow the Light Lumen Leaves. Gorgeous work. So it was a really cool surprise in the mail too.
Very cool. I think he was experimenting during COVID. I think he was experimenting with, I guess does it look like a cyanotype or whatever? I think he was doing some work with that. Yeah, so maybe that's what that was. Yeah.
So beautiful. It was gorgeous. So that was a fun little surprise to get in the mail. And, you know, other than that, working on my book, all that fun stuff. And now I'm here talking with you guys.
Awesome. Awesome. What do you think is like a finish line? Do you have like a date you think the your book will be kind of completed? Have you put a personal deadline on it, or are you just kind of just going with the flow on it?
Well, it's written, it's done. Mm. Okay. But now I'm going through and I'm editing each section of it because it's like a 6-course type of book of going through mindfulness and using photography to find it. So each week I'm kind of going through, I'm editing, I'm having like some of my friends test it out if they want to participate. And after that, I'll make my final edit. So I'm hoping by the end of my summer break, it will be good to go. So in the fall.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And is this more like, is this going to be something for like that would help somebody like just your average photographer, or is this more like geared towards like a school curriculum kind of program where they can use to sort of like what you're doing at your school? Is what's the angle there?
what's my audience? I think my audience is anybody who struggles in like mental health and just needs to find a way. I think in the film community, we're so already kind of, well, some of us are well aware of this, but it's like, it's really just how to use it to find all of those pieces of mindfulness. So okay. I think anybody could benefit from it, as you know, it's just about slowing down, because I really integrate a lot of my counseling practices through it. So it's not really like a techie type of a book of how uh-huh. to shoot, but it's more of using anything. And I don't really discriminate, because I have kids that only have a phone or people who only have a phone or a camera. I want to be more of a helper in the mental health world and finding mindfulness. So, I mean, phones are complicated though, because of notifications. And I talked about that in the other podcast, yes. I think that's the only gripe I have is that, you know, I check my phone for time and I'm an hour deep. I'm like, oh my gosh, what time is it? It's a rabbit hole. So, oh,
yeah. Yep.
Kind of defeats the purpose of being mindful.
Right. I think that's one thing I do enjoy about like getting out with actual cameras rather than my phone is kind of shutting off the whole, static of social media and just this online life that we live now, and just going out by myself and with just some cameras and my own thoughts. And like, that's part of the therapeutic part of it. Right.
It so is. Like, absolutely. Yeah. But it's like, we do it without even really realizing that we do it. That's the thing. And this kind of connects all the dots. And even as I'm going through it, it's helping me. And I wrote it. I'm like, okay, this really grounds me, because it's a practice. It's not something that you like just learn once and you check the box. It's like a practice, like a lifelong practice that if you're aware of it, it can change your life. So, you know, it's really just the elementary steps of how to connect it. There's so much more in that whole field that's just well beyond. You can get like a dictionary size book about it.
that'd be your follow up, right?
I'm like, I don't want to write that much, but I want mine to be a little bit more fun.
Nice. All right. Well, is that pretty much?
Right. Sorry, quick little question. Where is it going to be published, Roxana? Like once you release it, where can people pick one up?
You know, I haven't decided. I'm going to use Blurb just because I think it's easy. I want to keep the cost low because, you know, it's more of a helping book. I'm not trying to, you know, I don't know. I want to make it accessible. And I'm thinking Blurb because they use Amazon, or I think it'd be easy to connect it even through my Instagram. And it's like, I believe it's print on demand. So that would be cool. I mean, I'm going to print my own copies also, and I'll send them to my favorite people, like you guys, of course. But
I was going to get to that. Do we get a press conference?
Yeah, of course you do. That's like a no-brainer. You'll be the first one. So
I don't know. I think you might have promised Clay Daly the first.
I did. But you know, I'm going to print a few, so you all are going to be my people.
Nice. I look forward to that. Yeah. All right. Well, as far as my week, I made a mistake today or this weekend. I had like 4 days off. I thought I was going to do some shooting. And I was like, well, I'm going to do it on Monday. Father's Day weekend, there's a lot going on. We had a lot of plans, a lot of things to get done. And like, so I'm going to do it on Monday. Well, Sunday night after I left like a family Father's Day event at my aunt's house, I got home and my feet swelled up like really weirdly, and particularly my left foot. And I'm like, am I having a heart attack? Like if you get on Google and like Google anything that's going wrong with you, like you are going to die within minutes. So apparently
you will die. That's your death sentence.
Not a great idea.
It's always death is like always one of the things that it might be. So, right,
so I was afraid to go to sleep last night. I was like, maybe I should just stay up all night until I can get to the doctor, because I don't, maybe I won't wake up. Like, according to Google, I'm impending some sort of doom or whatever. But so I had to like cancel my plans of shooting today and go to the doctor. And I don't know anything yet. They did some blood work, but they did put me on getting old sucks. And apparently I'm now on a blood pressure medication because I have high blood pressure. So, getting old. Yes. 49 is looking like a great age at this point, but so it did kind of destroy my shooting, but I got home from the doctor's office and, I had a couple packages on the porch. So I did, at least I was kind of glad they came in, because at least I have something to talk about on this episode. So the first thing I got, actually, this was a couple of days ago. Jacob Erickson sent me, he asked for when I was going to do the next print torture fade test. And I do want to do another one, because I want to try out some different papers with the HP printer and set them in the garage, you know, a window for a year and see how they on different papers, some more expensive papers this next time. But he happened to have like an old Dysub printer, and these things are still kind of out there. I think Kodak actually has a Dysub printer out now that does 4x6s, and like you can still find this technology, but it's not as prevalent as maybe it was like 10, 20 years ago. So he offers like, hey man, send me the images that you normally, because I use two images, a black and white image and a color image. I use the same two images every one of these torture tests that I do, so I can kind of see, just kind of keep the test more scientific or whatever. So I sent him the files of the two images I use, and he printed out, and he's in Sweden, so he printed out two Dysub 4x6s for me to use in my next print torture chamber. Torture test in my garage window. So it's nice because I have a different technology to test out on a year fade resistance test or whatever. But in that package, he included this cool thing, man. It looks like a slide, like, you know, like the slide holder or whatever, like, a, you know, what do they call them, Andre? A slide, you know,
the thing you put slide mount.
Slide mount, yeah. It's like the shape of that, but it's a bottle opener. It's metal, and it looks like a slide, but it's a bottle opener. And one side it says Kodak Ektachrome, and the other side it says Kodak Kodachrome, and it's a beer bottle
that
opener.
That is like, so cool.
Oh my gosh, that is rad. Seriously.
No, if anybody has one of those.
Right?
You can send that to our addresses.
I was pumped about it, man. And so thank you Jacob for sending me those prints and that. And then also I got in from Nuno Cruz. He was one of the other judges on the expired film photography Facebook group, the photo competition we did a month or so ago. And just out of the blue, he like sent me like a bunch of expired film. Nuno has several, he sells expired film. It's kind of his thing. And let me see. I wrote down his, he has a eBay store that is, it's called NARC expired film, and NARC expired film. And you can check out what he's got on eBay. He has a lot of like really crazy, like the rows he sent me are some films I've never even seen before. And so he's got some really odd old expired films. He's also on Instagram at NARC, NARC underscore expired underscore film. So definitely give him a follow and check out if you're into wanting to find some freaky old films, expired films. He's got it, man. He's got just an example. Here's what he sent me. Some Scotch Chrome 640T, some Imation Scotch, let's see, HP 100 color print film, some 3M. This box is so cool. I almost don't want to open it. It looks like straight from the 1970s, but 3M. It just says color print film in a really old looking box, ASA 100. And then here's a brand I've never even heard of this before. It just says Profi Color Premium Quality 200. Like, I've never even seen that before. Some Ferrania Solaris 100. I have shot that back in the day, I believe. Another Imation, which was a company that took over 3M's film division at the very end there. And so I'm assuming it's still made by Ferrania. Some CS, color CS 100. That's a slide film. And then another Solaris 400. That's Ferrania Solaris. And then something called Europrint 100. Never seen that before in my life. And it's a really cool looking box too. And then a Europrint 400. And then lastly, this one really cracks me up. It has nowhere on the box does it say where it was manufactured, so I have no idea who made this film. But it says, it just says professional for reporter. That's all it says.
That is so rad. Oh my gosh. So
I will have to put some posts on Facebook, on the Facebook group, of not only this badass bottle opener that Jacob Erickson sent me, but of these really cool expired film boxes that Nuno Cruz sent me of this really just a really unique collection of expired films. So so I'm looking forward to shooting some of that. And Roxanne, I should probably send you some of this because you dig the expired film. I know Andre doesn't not really down with it, but
I'm like so jealous right now. That is so cool.
Well, I'll send you a couple of rows of it because as slow as I'm getting through photography, it's going to take a while. Me get through all
this. How fun. I should do something. I should send back a couple of different other roles too. We'll have we should have a film exchange, a trade.
Well, you're going to send me your book. I think I can give you a customer some films.
That's so there,
I think we're even. But but thank you, Nuno Cruz for that. That he is on our Facebook group too. He's Nuno Cruz. It's Nuno Cruz. But check out his eBay store, NARC expired film and NARC _expired_film on Instagram. And last up, and I think I might have mentioned that Mark Rossi, he is in Canada and he makes his own, he makes camera straps and wrist straps for cameras, out of leather, like does, like leather working. And, so he hit me up and asked if I'd be interested in getting a couple of samples to like a review for the show or whatever. And I was like, yes, handmade leather camera straps. Yeah, count me in. And then he actually like said, well, hey, you got this 80s filter challenge going. And maybe I can send you a couple extra too that you can give away as prizes to whoever wins the 80s filter challenge. I was like,
nice. Oh, ooh.
So he sends me a little letter here with he gave me these straps are beautiful, I got to say. But he sends me a letter, says, hey, Mike, I hope all is well during these interesting times. And close, you will find some product for your review, promotion, and gifts for the Negative Positives gang. Included, you will find a Mirage black classic leather neck strap with brushed nickel metal rivets. These are one of my most popular sellers. One trims, T-R-I-M-Z, with red edging and brushed nickel metal rivets. This is one of my personal favorites. I really like the accent the edge color gives. The next two items are part of the Artisan Series wrist straps. These wrist straps are made to evoke old world charm and look rustic. The Artisan Series are available in 8 colors. I have included the Chevy Blue with an old brass metal rivet and a russet colored one, one of my favorite colors, with the copper finished metal rivet. That blue one is that's one I'm not giving away. I'm going to have to keep that one because blue is my favorite color. So I'm just saying. But I also included 3 older styles of the classic leather wrist strap line. These are among the first I made and have a really nice SB foot tannery leather and are about 1 inch longer in length. Very nice leather, very soft. They're just sitting around the shop and I have no use for them as they're not part of my product line any longer. Figured you could find a nice home for them. Thanks for the great podcast episodes and a most excellent Facebook group. Regards, Mark Rossi. And the name of this company is Due North Leather Goods Company. Due North, like D-U-E, North Leather Goods Company. He has a website and you can see all his fine leather work straps. And let me tell you, these, these things are beautiful and they definitely they're definitely classy enough to go on like a Leica. But yeah, some really, really awesome stuff here. And Mark, thank you so much. I'm going to probably keep one or two of these for myself and then we'll give away some. And I don't know, maybe Roxanne and Andre, maybe I can find something to give to them because I feel like I get all these goodies and Andre and Roxanne gets left out in the cold sometimes. guys, check out Mark Rossi. Due North Leather Goods Company on is the website. I'll put it in the show notes. I know it's called Due North Leather Goods, but I can't remember the actual website. I forgot to look it up before we did this this segment recording. But I'll put it in the show notes for sure, so you can click on that and check out. Like, it's handmade in Canada leather camera straps and wrist straps. So very cool, you, Mark. And we will definitely give some of these away to the winners of the 80s filter challenge as well. So such a cool thing, right?
That is so cool.
So anything cool. Handmade always just kind of blows me away.
Right, right. Yeah, I was thinking like I had to tear down my kids' play set. Like they had this huge swing set that like the grandparents bought for them when they were little, and they haven't played on it in years. And it's been sitting in my backyard, kind of just like slowly decaying. And I'm having to, I've been cussing when I mow around it every time I mow. Like they don't ever get on this thing anymore. Why am I mowing around this thing? So I spent all day. I think it was Saturday tearing this thing down. And I swear there must have been like 3,000 bolts in this thing. But anyway, so we got all this wood, and I was thinking like, okay. You know, I could probably give this wood away or sell it or something. That's like, what can I make out of this wood? And like, of course, already my wife is like, oh, well, we could make this, we can make this, we make this. And I'm like, yeah, all these things are above my pay grade, I think. Like, I don't know if I could make it. Like, I've always wanted to be somebody that makes things, but I always struggle horribly at making things. So I appreciate anybody that can make things, like handmade things with their hands. Like, I'm probably going to just at best come up with a basic bench out of this wood and hope that like that doesn't collapse if somebody sits on it. Like that's basically my maker experience, I guess. But all right, well, I think that's pretty much our weeks. I think we're gonna discuss this on the break. I think we might have a little special surprise for the next segment. That's what we call a teaser in the business, folks. So let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back. Folks, we were back from the break, and yeah, we thought we weren't going to have a guest, but something kind of fell into our laps here, and we had to take advantage of the situation. We're going to be joined by Mr. Brian LaBelle, who happens to be, I don't know, married to one of the superstars in the film community, Mrs. Roxana Angles. So the spouse of Roxana on Negative Positives. I mean, everybody's heard my wife on the show, so I felt like it's time for Roxana to get her, I don't know, I want to say better half, because it's hard to top Roxana, but like,
no, you can't beat Roxana.
No, that's not true. No, he is definitely my better half, and I'm super stoked to, you know, we're always shooting together, and I'm always talking about him, so he might as well get on the show already.
Well, Brian, it's nice to finally be talking with you. We've heard a lot about you. It's all been good. Don't worry. She hasn't said anything bad about you, so that's all. You're covered there. But how about you tell the fine folks a little bit about yourself, what you do for a living, and then also kind of transition into how you got into shooting some film photography again.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I started shooting film when I was, really early in life, as a kid, and that moved me into high school. And in high school, I was still shooting film and taking photography classes there. And then right after high school, I went and made my first Super 8 movie. So I did a Super 8 short film.
Nice.
That really launched my, career into, filmmaking. So that one was an interesting process, and went to a few film festivals and ended up meeting filmmaker Andrew Davis up in Santa Barbara. He did a movie called The Fugitive, and I was taking a college class and interviewing the guy because of journalism. And he asked me what I wanted to do. And he said, I said, film, I want to be a filmmaker, ironically enough. And he says, well, did you do any movies? And I said, well, I got this 12-minute, Super 8 short film. And he's like, well, bring it in. and Andrew Davis, he did The Fugitive and a few of those big, 90s, action films. Mm-hmm. I was over the moon. And we watched it. And then it kind of led into, a whole nether stratosphere where they were like, we love this. Would you write a screenplay? And then it got me into screenwriting. never really worked out with the film, but it led me into independent filmmaking. And I ended up going into, you know, network television and making independent films. Mind you, at that time, everything shifted to digital. So I can't say that I had shot anything at that point, any movie on film. We were shooting, you know, with Panasonic Barracams and things like that. But the way it all kind of went was I kept going, doing those, and those are not always easy. Did a film called The Art of Travel, which is probably what I would say is my most successful film, and I'm very proud of it because it's made it to the many of the top 25 best travel movies list.
Oh, wow.
Which is really rad, because it's like you see like Into the Wild next to it and you're like, you got to be kidding.
Right, right. Wow.
It's a real honor, you know. And we shot that in like 5 countries, you know, including the U.S. I mean, we shot it in Nicaragua, Panama. We did Peru and Bolivia. The ending of the film's in Machu Picchu, Peru, and then and ends in the Salar de Uyuni in Bolivia.
What year was this?
That was 2008 when the film released, and now it's kind of moved into like one of those like sought after cult travel movies that people are always trying to look for. And thankfully it's on Amazon Prime. So I'm going to go ahead and plug it. Feel there free to start travel. Actually, if you have Amazon Prime, it's free.
Oh, sweet. Well, definitely. Yeah. Hell yeah.
So that was mildly successful in that we had an audience. It just wasn't commercially successful. So it's got a great following. And, you know, I couldn't continue to make indies the way we were doing it then. So I got into commercial directing, and now I have a company called Summerlin Creative. And we, ironically enough, we focus on you know, commercials for travel and tourism clients. So it's still location, you know, work. And we do all the biggest, you know, all the commercials for the greater Palm Springs area. So if you see a Palm Springs commercial over there, for some reason, it most likely I did it.
Nice.
We've created a whole commercial campaign for Discover Long Island, New York, which was phenomenal. And then also Santa Monica, California. So that became kind of my bread and butter. But film was what Roxana led me back to film. That's how that went. I was shooting with my, you know, Sony A7S2, and I probably was happy with it and, you know, yielding all the results that you get from it. But when she got me back to film, it was like returning back to my childhood. And, I just became enamored with not only just the process and the ritual of it, but the overall texture that I had come to kind of really miss from digital. Now I literally just shot with my Sony again over the, you know, we went up to Big Bear last week, and I took it out of the dust and blew off the dust.
The cobweb. Yeah, but then he didn't tell you that he's been throwing on all the old lenses.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I've been stealing all of her lenses.
Stealing them.
And falling in love with the look of that. But even with those SLR lenses on the camera with the adapter, I'm still missing, you know, the texture. And I just told her, like, you know, I love the Big Bear photos, but there's just no grit to them. And
yeah. Or like last year's, because you know how on like Instagram and Facebook it shows you like what you did last year. And last year we went to Big Bear and he shot film.
That's right. Yeah, we were shooting with, you know, Kodak. What was it last year? It was like the
It could have been just cold, like gold.
It was very
gold, you know, gold. The stuff that
I just remember it had that wonderful red texture that you get from Kodak, that whole park vibe that comes out.
Yes.
And I just loved it. And, you know, in fact, if anything, I had to pull some of the reds down on the facial, you know, the influence, because that's how that is. But I just dug it. And you know, usually I've become very fond of shooting black and white, and HP5, I think. And is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, you like the HP5. You like the T-Max, whatever the T-Max, I give you, whatever I give him. That's right here.
I'm kind of a film. Whatever fan. She just gives it to me.
I know.
I must say, that, you know, film
whatever row Roxanne will let you have.
I know. Right. Whatever I hand him, he shoots.
So Brian, before we get away too far away from like filmmaking. Do you think that Super 8 still has a place for like somebody that's like trying to learn filmmaking, like to shoot on film, even if it's like Super 8? Does that still have a place in the learning process? Do you think that helps aspiring filmmakers to you think it helps them in any way, or is that kind of is it just too price prohibitive? Like, what's your thoughts on like shooting on film for somebody that's trying to get into it?
Yeah, you know, now you raise a good point with price, but I think it's, you know, the reason why I chose Super 8 as a first film project for me was I wanted to get down to just the rawness of just the picture and not have to worry about audio. I wanted to tell a visual story. Mm-hmm. And remove myself from all of the things that you get with, you know, shooting even with sound. Mine was a silent film, and yeah. I made that a point that if I can't tell a story visually, silently, you know, then I need to go back and figure it out, you know.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I think it's important, and I think Super 8 is phenomenal, especially now. The reason being is we have a oversaturated, you know, marketplace of great ideas that are all just pristine, and you could feel like there's no dream to it, you know. You
right,
like walk right through the, you know, computer into wherever they're shooting. And I think with film and Super 8, you have that dreaminess.
It
that
does,
yeah. Necessary, mm-hmm. to remove the audience from you. And that's important. And I would highly recommend anybody, and even me, go back and shoot Super 8. I've been talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I shot it for the first time last summer on our family's vacation or whatever. And when I got it back, like, it literally is like it's the most favorite. It's like probably my favorite thing I've done on a vacation and like in ages, because like it immediately has like, I don't know. It looks like your memories in a way, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what it is. Like, one person commented on when I posted the video, like, if it wasn't for the cars in the video, in the film or whatever, you wouldn't have known when this was taken, which I kind of liked, but there is something like, something about that look, man. Like, it just, I feel like it actually is how I remember the trip rather than like a perfectly, you know, like digital, like even a video on your phone, technically right. Looks better, you know, it's sharper and clearer, but like those videos, I never look at videos on my phone, but this, I cherish these like two Super 8 reels cartridges I shot on my vacation last year. And I'm going to do it again this year. Cause, it was a real blast.
Yeah. And I agree with you on the timelessness. And I think the timelessness is so necessary. I mean, this is a funny story. I had all the film that I bought, remember, yes. For Italy last year. And what happened? I think I ended up...
brought the camera.
I brought the film, not the camera.
Oh my God.
I had spent a lot of money getting film, and I'm like, we're going to shoot Super 8 in Italy on our honeymoon for our wedding. And then I got there, and I had was the film.
That's a bummer.
But listen, I mean, Super 8, and I mean, mixed medium is so powerful, and I'm trying to get back to that. In fact, the commercials, I don't have the luxury of a budget to shoot film, but I'm always searching for a budget to where I can shoot film, because I would love to go back and do mixed medium where, you know, you have some Super 8 and you have some 16. And if you look at what Spike Lee is able to do with that, he's one of my favorite filmmakers that's able to see that vision where you shoot Super 8 and shoot 16, and then you go, you know, your aspect ratio changes, and and it's magic, you know. It's a great way to tell a story, and it's vital, I think.
Very, very cool. So when you got back into film, when Roxana forced you back into film.
That's right.
But, and you saw your first shots, like, what was your thoughts? Like, it's like, okay, did you immediately, was it something like, okay, this is something I've been missing in my photography. Is that kind of the thought you had?
You know, it's interesting because the first roll of film she gave me was expired film.
Of course.
And she says, just see what happens. Mm-hmm. And from back in the day, it was always about pristine, you know, film, and it had to look right. Everything had to be in its place, you know, when I was a kid shooting. And I had this expired film, and I know where I was up in Jackson, Wyoming with it. And I think it was black and white. And my dad's a photographer, and I was with my dad, and he says, what do you got in there? I said, well, it's old expired film. He's like, what the hell are you doing? I said, nowadays people like to shoot on expired film, Dad. I've never done it, but I'm about to do it. So I was blown away, you know, and I think because of the expired film, I didn't pick on myself, you know.
Yeah.
And, I was able to accept my mistakes, and my mistakes kind of blended perfectly with the expired film. So, like, what a way in.
Right.
You know, what a way in. But
sort of,
it was
sort of the happy accidents thing, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that was, and I think when I see my black and white work and I compare it to my color work, I always feel I'm better with black and white for some reason. I've just kind of found my stride with it. Mm. Not sure exactly why, but
did you do a lot of black and white on your digital camera before you went back to shooting some film?
No.
Yeah.
Digital camera, no. But I mean, my short film was black and white, you know.
There you go.
Did two things. I shot my short film was shot on Tri-X reversal 160, I think it was Tri-X or something. And then that was black and white. And then I also shot it half in Kodachrome because Kodachrome was still around.
Ah.
So, you know, and it had this like odd 12-minute storyline where you were in two different periods of time. So the black and white was like the old West and the color was the, you know, quasi present day thing.
Right, right.
And it was so fun to have that, you know, when you would go from the edit from the Kodachrome where you had these golds and it was like sunset and just crazy to black and white, you know, flashbacks. And what was great is I got some of that black and white film back and it had a lot of crazy things that, you know, flash frames and weird stuff. And I basically, when the film runs out, so I kept some of those like strange film like mistakes and used them for the flashback scenes. So I never had any fake flashbacks. It was always like the film would just roll out and go white or something weird, you know, or you had these strange flashes because, you know, maybe your old Super 8 was clunky. And I know I shot that on a very clunky Super 8 borrowed camera. Uh-huh. And all of that was great because I learned that you could adopt all these mistakes and those little things that would make you angry when you first saw them became things that would save you in storytelling or, you know, offer another perspective on the photograph, which is, I think, where Roxana really gets it right.
Right.
Embracing, as you know, all of these unique variables.
That, all my mistakes.
You know, you lean into them.
And there's many.
So I'm going to ask you a really tough question here, Brian. It's like when somebody asks me what my favorite band is. I'm a musician, so when somebody asks me what my favorite band is, so who's your favorite filmmaker?
Oh boy, you know, it's funny. It changed through the years, and it's changed a lot. You know, I've gotten very, you know, if I got to go into time periods, I think I should probably do it that way. So for the, you're, you know. my current love is the new wave European vibe, you know, of the 60s. And so I think a lot of Godard, and that's just going back, you know, like if I'm sitting there watching Criterion right now, I'd watch a lot of, you know, Godard, or, you know, I'd watch a lot of Federico Fellini, I think, just crazy. But now you go back to my younger self, you know, my 1984 self, my Stranger Things version of myself. You know, Steven Spielberg was my guy then, you know. And but today, you know, I was fond then. David Lynch. You know, I've fallen deeply in love lately. Well, I'm not nailing it. You know, my favorite. I've been coming up with a list.
You have a whole list.
Stanley Kubrick. If I have to throw down a modern times guy, I got to say Stanley Kubrick.
Okay. Okay. So are you, I always wonder this, like somebody that has been a filmmaker or whatever, can you watch a movie without like constantly like thinking technical things about like how they're shooting it?
That's a good question for me.
if it's a movie for the first time and I'm, you know, got my popcorn and I'm at the movie theater and I'm excited to see the movie and it delivers, I don't think I think once about anything. You know, if it's a movie that I want to revisit over and over again, then that's just like, you know, God, Roxana gets tortured with that.
But no, you know what, though? When something is really cool, like a certain camera angle, he'll say, even if it's the first time, he's like, oh, you know, he gets so excited. And then he's talking about the camera angle and how this is probably done. Yeah. And it goes into a rabbit hole where sometimes we have to, if we're Netflixing at least, home, then he pauses it and we have a conversation.
Well, somebody that I'm not like a real nerd about that kind of stuff, but like I have to say, if someone was to ask me that question, and why would they ask me that question? Because I would have no real expertise on it. But I think like Tarantino is an obvious kind of choice. Right? Do you like Tarantino's work?
His work is like explosive. I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, got some massively amazing shots and the use of the medium and the color but he harks back to those old filmmakers. So that's what makes him so brilliant, and his composition and choices. You know, he sucks you into a period of time, and I think that's what I love about, you know, Tarantino or Lynch, you know, very different filmmakers, and even Kubrick, because it's a sensory experience and you're absolutely moved into a different place and time. And I can watch those films 1,000 times and still feel like I'm walking through a dream, you know?
Right. Right. And Tarantino is a big proponent on shooting film. There you go.
And I know, Scorsese, I can't even leave him out, you know? You know, every time I watch a Scorsese film, even the worst Scorsese film, I'm like, that's just phenomenal. Like, look at that shot. And, I'd get back to shooting film in a heartbeat.
Well, Spike Lee also shot that one.
Black Klansman.
Black Klansman on film.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a way that I haven't really tried this, but like, do you think there's a way when you're watching a movie, watching a film or whatever, that you can be like, oh man, I like that shot. Do you think there's a way that we can, if we pay attention, like that's something I should try to do in my still photography. Do you ever do that?
I do. And I don't have a lot of latitude to pull it into my commercial work, but every now and then I'll find myself shooting a high to a low angle on a 16, you know, where the lens is wide and I know where I'm going with that. I know that's Kubrick. I know where I got that from, you know. So you do that, and I tend to love, you know, playing with actual lenses. I love, you know, wides. Become super fond of, you know, anything in the 16 range, and you know, 16 to 24, especially the older lenses. We shot with the Godfather lens on one of my commercials, which was Technovision, and that was cool. We slapped that thing on one of the red dragons that we were shooting with, and was it the dragon? I don't even remember. But man, yeah, that look was phenomenal. So I think what I love is also that, you know, I like to play with the lenses. That's huge. That's important. But I get all that from film, the movies, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've pretty much taken over this interview, and Andre's not had a chance to say a word edgewise. So, Andre, what you got for that?
I've been just kind of sitting back and enjoying. So we were kind of talking about it in the break before we started recording. We got so kind of far into multiple different rabbit holes before we all noticed that we hadn't actually hit the record button. But I was reminded of the time that I actually met both Brian and Roxana at the same time at the film photography Paideia out in San Clemente, put on by the Darkroom. And the thing that I kind of want to ask you, Brian, is, you know, do you guys have something similar like that within the filmmaking thing? Like, I know that there's like the festivals and things like that, but for the folks that are on the motion side of things, do you have some kind of meetup group where you guys, you know, get together and nerd out about this stuff?
I've been crying out for something like this ever since, you know, I met all of you, you know, and I haven't found it. It just seems like, you know, filmmakers are always trying to just get, you know, their product made, and they're working real hard, and they're trying to go out and do the festivals, and there's all this competition, and there's the whole, what are you, you know, are you shooting this? And there's a lot of career, you know, blocking the creative, I think, you know. And one thing I admire about, you know, this community is that there's just a genuine, relaxed vibe about being creative and sharing your knowledge and love for film. I want that to happen for filmmakers, because I think it would be so beneficial. But I don't see that kind of community out there. And we've talked about it. I've talked about that with Roxana a lot, because one of the things that I'm always wrestling with is wanting to meet other cinematographers and talk to them and just have a beer and find out what they love and what their favorite film stock is, their favorite camera, their favorite lens, and what was their favorite filmmaker. You know, I'd love to have that kind of experience. But I don't know that I'm looking hard enough, but I haven't seen it yet.
You think it's because competitiveness, like there's too much competition in that market, and like, so people don't want to be cool with each other.
I sense that there's a little bit of pretentiousness, and that there's this kind of hierarchy of knowledge, and there's not a lot of humility. I think that humility is a vital tool to learning and being great, and I think you can be extremely successful and be one of the best DPs or one of the best film directors, best screenwriters, and you can still be humble. I mean, the one thing that I see in your community is such a level of humility and love for just the process. And I think what happens is the love of process kind of gets, you know, weighted down by the burden of, you know, having to work on a new project, or you got to do this, or you have an agent and you're not available and you're, you know, too good for this one thing or not good enough for that one thing. And I think you're right in that sense, that if we could, as filmmakers, lower our guards and be the kids that we are and the lovers of the process that we are, I think we could all as a community help each other. But I just haven't found that yet.
Well, it sounds like you need to start a Facebook group. But
Yeah.
We start a podcast.
Spin off podcast.
There you go. Know. There you go. So, okay. You were kind of talking about how like the film community is very helpful with like sharing knowledge and helping people out. How much has Roxana helped you out with your return to film? Like I think you said in the break before we started recording that you were having her develop your film for you at first, but apparently she's kicked you in the butt a little bit, like she has Andre and I about. So tell us a little bit about Roxana's role in
yeah. She did, you know, and I was always so kind of cocky about it because every time, you know, I was like, I used to do that all the time. You know what I'm doing. Did your thing cut out?
No.
Oh, okay. And I used to just kind of feel like, oh man, I know what I'm doing. I made a Super 8 film. But no, I hadn't never done the darkroom bag. You know, I haven't done that. And taking the film out and spooling it up. And I mean, I remember doing that in high school, but not loving it. And now I'm fine. But the first couple of times of, you know, loading my film in that bag, and I would just have the freaking fit of my life, you know. I'm like, I can't even figure this out, you know. And
I've been doing this for decades, and I still like I still try to do it in a room my wife is not in, because she gets so mad at me because I start cussing and like it's just I mean, 90% of the time it works, but the 10% of the time it doesn't, I am cussing up a storm. And like, why do you put yourself through this? This doesn't even sound like fun. I thought you liked this hobby. And like, well, this is not every time, you know? So I just try to do it away from her now.
Now I've gotten, at one time I lost my mind in class and it was really embarrassing, you know? But like, I remember I got one of the spools wet where you load it up, and she's like, and I couldn't for the life of me get it to thread. And I was sitting there for like 20 minutes going, I don't know why it's not working. And she's like, well, you're damp. If it's damp, even slightly, it's going to get sticky and you're not going to get it in there, or something's going to happen.
Nightmare.
Like, that was in class, right?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And then, of course, they don't know the terms of what things are called. And I'm like, the doodad thing is stuck with this, you know. But no, it's been great. And her work has inspired my work, and I feel like process has made me a little less rigid. Her style has almost seeped into some of the things that I've been doing because of, you know, and I'm like, well, your angle, you're off on your, you know, she's like, well, I don't care. You know? Why does it matter? Well, who made that?
I mean, she is Roxana Angles, right? Yeah. So
because I get all symmetrical with my shots, and everything has to be like symmetrical, and I have to have like everything like level, and I got to have like right down the line. It's like that Kubrickian frame that I'm always sucked into. And she just, you know,
I know all the rules. I just break them all.
Dreamy, you know, dreamy, floaty shots that, you know. Right. Like, I'm like, I finally dared myself to do a shot, like, kind of, wow, it's off on an angle. It's Dutch. I've never done that.
Right, right. I got to ask, like, and I'm going to let Andre chime in again. I'm still hogging all the time here, my wife and I, we share kind of the hobby of music, but we don't really share, like, she's not really like into photography like I am or whatever, but like, you guys both have a passion for like, for image making, whether it be motion picture or the commercial work you're doing or in still photography or whatever. Like, what's the dynamic there when someone wants to buy new equipment? I feel like if my wife was into photography, we would be living in a tent somewhere, because like
we have cameras everywhere. That's how it looks like.
We got cameras everywhere, and the good news is I always think of a camera as like a puppy that was left in the street, And and Roxana found the puppy, and she's bringing the puppy home, and she's like, hey, guess what we just got? You know? And it's a beautiful, you know, old, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's beautiful. And she's the one that's been grabbing all the gear. And then when, you know, Christmas rolls around, of course, then I'll spring for something, you know, like the Mamiya, we got that. And, mm-hmm. and you know, the, what was the Polaroid one?
Mm-hmm. He got me the SX-70 that I love.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And so, but I don't, we don't have too much of that. She's the one that's doing all the equipment buying. And then I kind of pillage her lenses.
Yes. Well, yeah, because I also got, like, a while back ago, my dad had that attorney friend that was handling that estate sale, and they sent me like boxes of lenses, and it was insane, and cameras and things. And it was a while back ago, but yeah, he had a fun time going through all those lenses.
Yeah, I still use them like crazy. There's a super wide Vivitar that's so weird, and it's like one of those like screw mount ones where you have to like screw it on, and love that lens. It creates the craziest lens flare, and it's like a dream. If you want a dreamy lens, those old Vivitar super wides are crazy.
Nice. All right, Andre, I'm gonna let Andre speak. What do you got?
I mean, Roxana's obviously been able to, not that it seems like it took much convincing to to convert you into as much of a film photography nerd as she is. Have you been able to bring her onto the dark side of anything you've been working on? I know that you guys recently worked on that that short movie together.
Yes. So that short film was... a wonderful idea that, you know, Roger Corman launched this quarantine film festival. And of course, if you're a filmmaker, you know, Roger Corman, he was like the king of the B movies. And he launched Ron Howard and James Cameron and Jack Nicholson. And, you know, so I'm like, we got to do this, you know, and Roxana was the one that's like, you better do it. You know, you're not going to talk this time. And it's like, well,
I'm glad to see that she kicks your ass as much as she does ours, as far as like getting us motivated.
Accountability, people.
So I said, well, if we're gonna do it, we're not gonna have a script, and we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna have to all, you guys are all gonna have to be in it. And so she was obviously in it, and the kids were, you know, very tolerant, and you know, it was a hard cast to direct because you know, the kids are like, you pull them out of their like Roblox, you know, to be in a movie for a few minutes. And
did the kids have like really long riders that you had to like fulfill to get them to be in this film? Like, we need all blue M&Ms and
it was more like, I will only shoot for 20 minutes and you can't have any more takes than like 4 takes. And like, I'm going to bed and you can roll with nothing, and you know, I'm gonna leave you. So that's how the kids were. And then, you know, and then Roxana, I just had to, you know, work on her, because I'm like, I said, you're going to have to really be scared, and you're going to have to scream, and you're going to have to do these uncomfortable things. Well, the course of shooting stretched out across maybe 3 nights, you know, because of the A-list talent.
Our kids.
Shoot for more than an hour at a time. So then, you know, it finally came down to Roxana's darkroom moment, you know, which I loved. And we finally got in here to do it. And she's like, so what's my motivation? Like, what do you mean, what's your motivation? You're just developing photos, you know? And she's like, no, really. I mean, what's my direction? Like, what am I doing? I'm like, I don't know yet. I'm still trying to figure that out. And it was really funny, because it was like, we were working in this kind of weird professional, like, oh my God, you're totally acting like an actress right now. You're not even my wife right now. You are like
I'm not an actress.
You might as well be
either.
Like Natalie Portman and really angry, and I'm like a first-time director trying to tell you what to do.
I thought by motivation you meant like she was trying to like get permission to buy a new camera. Like,
what do I get if I help you out on this?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. This was just more like what am I thinking in my head? You know, what am I going through? And so we finally got that going, but it was a blast to do that little thing, you know, and I think it was fun, and I appreciate everybody supporting, you know, the 2 minute little scary movie.
Yeah, cool. I think we should do another, but on film, like,
yeah, I want to do it on film.
That would be bad.
Yeah.
There's your motivation. There's your motivation to do some Super 8 again. So there you go. Yeah.
Wait, so I've got another quick question here. So Roxana proved to be quite the scream queen, as we all found out.
Yeah.
Did you guys inform the neighbors that this was happening, or were they in their minds thinking like, well, they're not taking quarantine very well?
Yeah. I thought of that, and like I did, and it was crazy because I did have that big lightning strobe light.
Going
at the same time, so I'm like, our neighbors must think it's poltergeist over here, you know, the windows are like flashing and everybody's screaming, and you know, and it was, yeah, I no one complained, but I can't imagine what they probably thought, because that was a loud scream, and I made you do that scene. She must have run up the steps like 10 times.
More. It was more than that. Yeah. I was running. I felt like it was like all night long for hours.
Yeah, and I kept changing the angle. The hard part was just getting, you know, the monster to look like a monster, or try to be scary with nothing, because that was a part of the rules, is you just had to work with what you had in your house. You know,
there was no,
and I didn't want to do visual effects and do, I could have done some digital stuff, but I didn't feel like that was honorable, you know. I felt, well, we really got to do it like, you know, old school.
right. Yeah. So for people that might be listening to this that don't know exactly what we're talking about, because maybe they missed the episode where we announced this little horror short, where can people check that out, just in case?
One is called The Door, and I think it's on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel called Summerlin Story Co. So if you go to Summerlin Story Co., you can watch that 2 minute movie. And that was just shot on an iPhone, by the way, because those were the rules. And we could only shoot with everybody that we had in the house. You couldn't have anybody from the outside help you. And you only use mostly available light, except I had that, you know, lightning strobe in my garage, the commercial work. So yeah, that's where you can catch that. And you can catch my first independent film Somewhere There Too, which was shot in Thailand. And then Art of Travel, obviously you can get that on Amazon Prime. And
awesome.
As for the commercials, they're all over the place.
So I've asked questions. Andre's asked questions. I think it's maybe time for Roxana to like bring a little something to the table here. Like, what do you want? You have a chance to put your husband on the spot.
Marriage counseling, NPP style.
I'm putting him on the hot seat. Let's go. All right. So, my first question for you is, if you could pick one camera from my camera collection and one film from our freezer. See, I'm not doing this like from anywhere, but say like I sent him out tomorrow and he had access and I said yes to all of them. I always let him shoot, don't worry, any of them, but you know, what would it be?
That would be the AU-1. The Canon.
Yeah, I got you on that one.
I like that one, and I like the HP5 film.
Yeah, that's a good combo.
I like the Canon because I can use I have my favorite lens that I got at Sammy's that works so well with that whole thing. You know, that 55 1.2.
So not the Hasselblad, not the Rolleiflex?
I like the Rolly, but I don't dabble in it too much. You know, I feel confused with the Rolly. It's like, I don't know how to load it. And I haven't spent enough time with it. I love shooting with it, but usually you give it to me all ready to go, and I haven't really got into the role yet.
You know? Wait, Roxanne, you haven't taught this man to load a roll 120? Like,
no. I'm sorry.
He gets so frustrated. I'm like, I'll do it for you. Just get it here.
I love shooting with it, and I did. In fact, at one of the beers and cameras I did down in San Diego, shoot with CineStill, and I loved my pictures that came out on that. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
CineStill was rad on that.
Robot. Hashtag not sponsored.
So when you guys go out and shoot, like, I'm guessing there's been plenty of instances where you guys went out together and shot film together. Like, have you noticed a distinct difference in your all styles, or like, if you're at, cause you're at the same place. I always wonder this. Cause like, you know, I've been on photo walks where, you know, you always think like, oh, we're all kind of taking the same photo.
Know that feeling. Yeah. And I usually gripe about it. I'm the first person that'll be like the one that chimes in going, well, we're both doing the same thing. I mean, she's like, we're never doing the same
thing. No, it usually always comes out completely different in a way. In a way. Yeah.
Well, it always reminds me that just because I'm here and we're shooting the same pier doesn't mean that my shot's going to be your shot. And she's right. You know, I think the difference is clear. You know, my kind of inner soul always goes for these like more horizontal lines, and I kind of work in symmetrics, and she's floating through her shots, you know. So when I compare our shots, I would say those are the angular differences are the most clear to me. I don't know. What do you think is the difference?
I think that color choices, angles are totally different. I think that we just see different
film stock.
Like things that I see that he doesn't, you know, I'm more of a capture expressions. I try to capture expressions, and I like to have people, and I think that sometimes Brian likes more of the, like he said, like some of the angles, and sometimes he likes also the people, but it totally looks different. I think.
Yeah, I really try to find story as much as I can in the shot, and that comes from the filmmaking thing. So, you know, what I'm doing is like, if I'm doing any like street photography, which we've done in like San Diego, I know that I'm really always on the hunt for something just very unique or a character type thing when it comes to people.
If we boil this down to the essence, basically I'm picking up that maybe Brian, you're a little more regimented, and Roxanne is more free spirited, which has
through and through, like in our lives.
Yeah, no, I was like, yeah, some people remember this show, some people don't, but that show Dharma and Greg. Dating me pretty good at the moment. It's very much what we are.
That is so us.
You know, but like I said, it's like I feel like she's got me a little more loosey-goosey on how I want to approach a shot, and I'm a little more relaxed and a little less confined to this need for, you know, I guess something that I like to do when my job is, since I'm a director, is I like to control a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that letting go is a big part of this process, and letting, you know, your camera kind of find it and not have that control. She's been great at not having that letting go. She has that, I'll let go anytime. And she does I try to micromanage, you know, the hell out of something. But that comes from just my career path, where if I'm on a commercial, then I've got to have everything a certain way. But even with that, I try to shoot in the film light and try to keep things to source. But yeah, I got to let go a little more. That's for sure. Boy, this became a counseling session.
No, it always does with me.
These episodes tend to. The only reason we do this is just counsel each other for our. But all right, I have one more question for you guys. But I'm gonna let Andre. You got something else before I?
I'm gonna give you the last word, Mike.
All right. Well, okay. So being in a situation where, like, my wife's pretty creative, and some other areas that mm-hmm. I'm not, but we do share like a playing music together or whatever, so like we have that sort of creative outlet that we kind of both share or whatever. But like being in a relationship with two people that are creatives, mm-hmm. what's the good and bad of that, like?
So kindly too. I think that, and I always said this about Roxana when she was, you know, finding her art and growing with it, is I've kind of had that feeling as a kid and a filmmaker where I'm like, art is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
And it's great when, you know, you're on fire with it, and it's a curse when it's working against you, or you're not, you know, achieving a certain result that you expected or hope.
Right.
When you have two people doing art together, the one thing you have is that in common for sure. But sometimes we realize, and maybe we should put the camera down. Maybe we should just grab each other's hand, and maybe we should just sit here and just watch the sunset.
Right.
You know, because there's this tendency to where, you know, we're all, when we find the light, you just instantly go, where's my camera? Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's beautiful, the first thing you do is go, where's my camera? Mm-hmm. Not, oh, we're here. Oh, look at this good, beautiful sunset, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's been a little bit of a thing, maybe more for me, I don't know.
It's the reason I brought Instant, though, to Big Bear.
Yeah.
I really, that was intentional, even though I had my other one to get through.
Yeah.
But I really was intentional about just trying to do, like, at the lake, like, just do the Polaroid. And because I still wanted to document it. I mm-hmm. didn't want to document it on my phone, but I wanted it just to be that little instant and try not to get so sucked in. But yeah. It's hard because that one, when we were on the pier, though, I had my other camera and the light
sucks you
was
in,
just, you know, it's like, it's like a drug.
It was like 7 p.m., you know, with the water reflecting, you know, and the sun is in the perfect place just behind the trees, and everything's gold and rich, and the shadows are just as long as time, and you can't sit there and go, you just lose your mind. Because you love it so much. And I think that's the thing, mm-hmm. is finding the balance between your art that you love so much, but also this relationship that you have that you love so much too. And you have to find balance. So there's truth to that.
Yeah.
I think Andre has been trying to find balance with portraits of his girlfriend. And I feel like I haven't made fun of this yet. And I got to go ahead and make fun of this. Do you realize Andre, go ahead. His girlfriend is Audrey? Andre, like, come on. Like, seriously?
Oh, that's confusing.
I had to get it out there. I can't believe it's taken me a year to make fun of this fact that their first names are so damn close. But like,
yeah, and they say opposites attract. I call BS.
All right, well, Brian, it has been it's been a real blast to finally talk to you, first of all, but to have you on the show, and like, just thank you for bringing your perspectives and like, give us a little inside peek to living with Mrs. Roxana Engels. So that's
oh yeah, you got it. Anytime, and thanks for having me, and I look forward to hanging out with you guys when this is fun little game called Covet is wrapped up.
Seriously. Yeah, yeah. Gosh, I got to get out to Cali one of these days. I've never been out there. So, like, yeah.
Oh, you got to come see us. You'll love it.
Oh, I know I will. I know I will. Well, Brian, how about we, I guess, honestly, we're probably just at the end of the show. So we should just kind of get out all our socials and just kind of wrap this one up. We'll start with Brian. Brian, tell people where they can, all the social stuff you want me to put in the show notes, basically.
Oh, yeah. It's funny when you're on a podcast or you know how you forget everything.
Yeah.
Like everything is yeah. Like, what is my handle on Instagram? I totally don't even know anymore. So I post all of my like person like my photos on Summerlin Story Co. On Instagram. So it's like Summerland, all one word, like Summer and Land. Summerland okay. Story Co. And then I have also the other Instagram account for my commercial company, which is Summerlin Creative. And that's more skewed towards all my commercials. And then I'm on Facebook as well with both of those. So we have a Summerlin Story Co. Facebook page and then a Summerlin Creative Facebook page. And okay. the reason why there's two is one's more film related and the other one's more commercial. So Summerlin Creative is strictly like advertising commercials and things like that.
Okay.
So that's good.
And also yeah. you can check out your film on Amazon Prime, right?
Oh yeah. Yes. Art of Travel is available on Amazon Prime. I hope you enjoy it. If you're a traveler, especially, it's a good time to armchair travel, by the way, if yeah. you want to just disappear, yeah. you know. Proud of that film. Mm-hmm.
All right. Is that pretty much everything you want to get out?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's it. Thank
All
you.
All right. Well, Roxana, where can people check you out?
People can find me at Roxana Log on Instagram.
And Andre, where are you at?
All the artsy fartsy stuff is on at Andre on Film. And then, you know, some of the more personal stuff is at Andre.snapshots.
All right, you can see my photography on Instagram at Gutterman Photo, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. Let's see, you can join the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. And we also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives, mostly ran by a friend of the show, Mr. Bryce Randall. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives, and maybe Bryce will see it and highlight it for all of us to check out. You can support this program on www.ko-fi.com, coffee.com, ko-fi.com/negative positives. And hey, also, if you are doing the Negative Positives 80s filter challenge, we got to get this thing rolling. Like, we've had some entries, but it's been kind of slow, and I get it because it's been COVID. I get it. And I haven't shot in months. So I understand. We're going to actually extend that to the end of July, I think. We were going to do it at the end of June. We're going to extend that to the end of July. So get your 80s cheesy photos on, get those done and posted. If you put them on Instagram, use the hashtag NPP80S filter challenge. NPP 80s filter challenge. And we can, hey, if you win, you're going to win one of these really badass camera straps from Mark Rossi with Due North Leather Goods Company will be the one of the prizes we'll give away for somebody that gives us a really, really cool 80s filter challenge photo. So, all right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks, Brian LaBelle. The husband of Roxana for joining us tonight and really belling us out because we didn't really have much else to talk about. So it kind of came pretty handy. thanks for him for joining us. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you soon. Everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool film photos.
There it is. Great job. We'll see you folks soon. Thanks. Gutter Man Cave Production!